Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to The Hotbed. This is episode 7. Let's write about sex, baby. I'm Aniki Somerville.
I'm Lisa Williams.
I'm Tatiana Denford.
And we're really excited today because we've got Tatiana with us, who is our guest. Tatiana's come all the way from sunny... Tell us where you've come from.
Chelmsford.
Sunny Chelmsford.
Yes.
And Tatiana, just as a little intro, you're a writer, aren't you?
Yes.
What else do you get up to in your spare time?
Oh God, a little bit of everything. Child wrangling. I have three.
Respect.
Yes. Well, they all drive me a little bit around the bend. But, so that's what I do. I basically do that. I write and I do some mean karaoke occasionally.
Mm. Oh, cool. What's your tune?
Ooh, Son of a Preacher Man, I think.
Ah, and are you a proper singer or are you a kind of karaoke?
I was actually trained in opera.
Son of a Preacher Man, opera style.
You don't want to.
No, no. This is why I'm actually not great at karaoke, because when you're trained, it's a little bit cringy because everybody's sitting there going, oh, no, not that one again, because you're seen as a bit of a performer rather than somebody who's just up for a laugh. So
it gets more competitive,
I think. It does.
And especially if you go on first, then you set the bar really high and then everyone wants to just not get up and sing then because they're like, she is too good.
I like to set the bar really low.
Yeah, you would be good. Maybe you could go first because I'm really like that as well. I sort of go first and everyone's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. If she's done it. I mean, genuinely, I cleared the dance floor the other day. I went to a wonderful karaoke night for the charity Grief Encounter, which supports bereaved children. Aww. And it was at the Cuckoo Club, and it was really glam, and it was lovely. And there were some great singers, and then there was me. And I decided, no, it was so embarrassing. I put down Love Shack by the B-52s, because I think, well,
so
you're not really expected to have a great voice in that.
No,
it's just
it's
kind of
some
fun.
High notes there, though.
Didn't have a bloke to sing it with, and I thought, oh, maybe the guy that does the band in the backing, there was like a backing band, Rockioki, that's what they're called. And the guy said he would sing, but instead he said, oh, and Lisa doesn't have a guy to sing the male part, so would anyone like to volunteer?
Uh-oh.
I mean, it was like the tumbleweed started then.
No.
Some guy got up, bless, it, like, took pity on me. And you couldn't hear yourself, which in my case was probably a good thing. But
that's always a classic singer's kind of blaming the acoustics of the room. I always remember one of my friends like massacred Whitney Houston, and he came away and I could hear him in the toilet. And he was literally like, it was the acoustics. They were really bad. And
right.
I was like, no.
Nothing to do with your singing at all.
Well, we're not talking about karaoke today. We're actually talking about words and sexy words. And I guess kind of... writing about sex, which is traditionally quite difficult to get right, and they have these awards every year that come out, which basically award the worst sex awards, sort of literary awards, and it's actually quite hard because I think people find it's very cringy reading sex scenes generally.
Yeah.
To kick off, I want to pay tribute to somebody who played a really big part in my kind of learning about sex, which was Jackie Collins. I wanted to say Sir Jackie Collins. Is she not Lady Jackie Collins? She must be by now, surely. But anyway,
Dame.
I wanted to read... Yeah, Dame Jackie Collins. I wanted to read something about...
I think she's neither.
From her book, The Power Trip. And I guess the reason I'm reading this out is that for me, and we'll go on to talk about this a bit more, it was the first sort of descriptions of sex I ever read was Jackie Collins. Mm. And it did two things. I mean, I found it really kind of evocative. And the sex that she writes about is usually... quite masculine and hard. And the other thing is, it set up really strange expectations for men in my life, because I always thought that all of the men would be sort of have big hairy chests, be strapping, very tall and dominating, wear leather trousers and have enormous penises. Because she never really wrote about any disappointing sex. But I'll read this out and see what you ladies think. So this is from The Power Trip. She gazed up at him as his hands settled on her thighs, gently pushing her legs apart. And after that, he did something that he'd only ever done to her once before. And that was the first time they'd made love. He actually began performing oral sex on her. Cliff Baxter, the star of a million women's fantasies, was going down on her. His tongue was darting in and out of her most private places. A mind-blowing orgasm was swift.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so I just want to check reactions to that reading for both of you.
I liked that. Yeah, I liked that. I mean, how can you not like a mind-blowing orgasm? It was, I mean, the orgasm was swift, but so was the description. So I can't say it literally did it for me. But I like how there was oral sex.
And were you, sort of growing up, were you a fan? Or were you more, because Jilly Cooper was another one, wasn't she?
Yeah, Jackie, Jilly. Weirdly, was thinking about it. There was a very well-thumbed copy of a Jackie Collins novel that literally went around every single person in my school. And it was pretty mind-blowing. But it didn't make me then go and look up other Jackie Collins books. My mum, probably on her shelves, had lots of Nancy Friday, so I probably just read a lot of that. Mm. And still think that non-fiction is sort of sexier than fiction.
Fiction. Mm.
But the other one that we read a lot at school. Oh, we didn't introduce Joe. Baby Joe is here. He is still too young to understand the subject matter, luckily, but I'm sure he'll go on to have...
He's got his Barry White romper suit on.
Yeah, he looks exactly like Barry White today. He's composing a few songs to sing at karaoke later tonight. He's a set the bar high kind of guy, FYI. But we read lots of books by Virginia Andrews. Did you read any of her stuff?
No.
So her stuff was not erotic writing per se. It's very sort of like trashy, pulpy, easy to read stuff. And now when I look back on it, I think it's pretty dark. There was one, for example, Flowers in the Attic.
I can remember the cover.
Do you remember?
I remember that one, just vaguely. Yeah.
So a mum remarries and she hides her children in the attic. That's and it. The two eldest, the boy and the girl, end up having an incestuous relationship. And you really root for them. You really want them to be together throughout the whole sequel. And you read it as a kind of teenager or young teenager, and we didn't think it was weird. We just really enjoyed
reading it. And is there lots of sex in it?
There's kind of sex, but it's quite innocent, as innocent as it can be in a consensual, incestuous relationship. But I remember like one scene, not in that book, but in one of her many, many books. A girl kind of in bed and like rubbing up against a pillow and rubbing up against a bedpost. So it was sort of quite innocent young people sex rather than like anything that Jackie or Jilly would come up with.
What about you, Tatiana? Because I mean, you know, you're a writer yourself, but for sexy times sort of growing up, did those kind of books play a part?
Well, when you were reading that Jackie Collins piece, the thing that stuck out for me was when you said he did something that he'd never done before. And my immediate thought was, he's going to cook for her.
Yeah.
I just saw the comedy in it. And the thing is that that kind of stuff never did it for me.
Mm.
When I remember one of, I think it was when I was about 11, I remember there was a book on my parents' bookshelf in the house I grew up in. And it was like, it almost looked like leather. It was dark. And I think, I'm trying to remember. I think the title was something along the lines of witchcraft and priests in the medieval times or something like that. And I remember looking through it, and it was like the some of the pictures were really graphic. They weren't violent, but they described how priests would get in front of the women in question and place their hips on a hassock, and then they would undress them, and like they would call that an exorcism. And I'm looking at this going, I'm feeling a little bit like wobbly about this. You know, so that to me was something that kind of really stuck out. And it sounds a bit weird and dark, but I think the descriptions weren't obvious. And I think I still reach to that kind of writing when it comes to sex, like stuff that isn't, so stuff that leaves stuff to the imagination, I think.
It's funny you said that, because, I mean, sort of Nancy Friday, someone we talk about a lot, and she documents lots of women's fantasies, and a lot of them do tend to involve being dominated or being tied up, or, you know, sort of being out
and
of
it
control.
Is like that kind of S&M, yeah.
And I think one of the first proper fantasies I had was, one of the crushes I had at school was called Ben Koutavides, and I used to have a recurrent fantasy that he would tie me up, and nothing would actually happen beyond the fact that he would just tie me up and then hit me with sort of twigs, and that would be, because I didn't really understand how sex worked, but I knew that that was quite an evocative kind of, that was probably one of the first things I'd ever thought about. What about things like, because it's interesting, I mean, obviously they were almost like the Jenny Cooper, Jackie Collins, they were kind of like the first women who started writing about that really in a commercial sense. And then I guess the most recent example we've had, which I feel quite ashamed, actually, because I've not read it, is 50 Shades.
Oh, yeah, don't be ashamed of not reading that.
And I don't know what... Do you know what? I think what I did is I put it on my Kindle and I started, and then unfortunately I abandoned it, because I just... I think I tried to go forward into the more sexy bits and was a bit disappointed. But Lisa, did you read it? And
I dipped in. I dipped in and wasn't for me. The whole inner goddess thing really grated about, she sort of has this way of describing how she feels by projecting it onto her inner goddess, and her inner goddess doing a flip and a turn. And I didn't really enjoy it, but I thought it was really interesting. First of all, 7-figure deal for the writer E.L. James.
And it hit a moment in culture where there were a lot of women who were a little bit bored and who wanted something interesting, and that's great. It's like the book and its phenomenon is very separate from the writing in it. Because you can't focus on the writing of that book. That book is just a phenomenon.
Absolutely. You know? And also, it's very modern in the sense of probably publishing deal not going to someone who is, you know, an experienced writer and a brilliant writer, yet has captured someone's imagination. So that was interesting. Also, Kindles, you said your Kindle... Wasn't that interesting? They were calling it mummy porn, first of all. So that's a whole other thing to talk about, because it was almost like saying women can't watch normal porn. They have to read this. And it was very derogatory to kind of like dismiss it as mummy porn, when actually, just like you say, women were needing it, enjoying it. Yeah. You know, if they were enjoying it, then brilliant.
Well, actually, it's surprising people did, because I mean, I read it on a Kindle or tried to read some of it, but actually... A lot of people used to read it on the tube with the cover actually open. And I thought, this is like the first time that I've kind of seen women reading a book where everyone knows what it's about. The title is clear, you know, and you're actually doing it quite openly.
But I think that's when it tipped into the mainstream, and when they were talking about it on This Morning and Loose Women, and it suddenly became sort of almost more unacceptable not to have read it. But at the beginning, it was all about the Kindle, and we can read this because it's a bit like having something in a brown paper bag. You know, people don't know that we're reading this on the tube, and we're getting a little kind of thrill from reading it, and nobody knows, which made me think about the Hotbed podcast. And that's quite discreet, and I think people are enjoying being able to have their headphones in and listening to it without people knowing, apart from one listener who wrote in to say that she was about to do a presentation at work, and she, her iTunes was up, and one of our really rude titles from series one, possibly "I'd like something up my bottom, please," just flashed up on screen. And we had a few people say that about our titles, but yeah, with the Kindle, I think it allowed a lot of people to read it. Then it got really, really famous, and then it became poolside reading. Read it with your family, pass it on to your stepmom, etc.
I think, you know, what's interesting is that it definitely normalizes a certain kind of book. I mean, I flipped through the first three pages and I literally just went, I cannot get into this, because maybe it's like how musicians listen to music. Maybe me as a writer, I sound like a snob, I don't mean to, but I think I could not get past how clunky the writing was. And yet, when you look back at, when I was in my 20s, I started reading Henry Miller. So like The Rosy Crucifixion and then Tropic of Cancer. That to me was the same kind of almost aggressive descriptions of sex, and like he would use words that I was like, what, you know, and the characters in his books were really odious, and yet it kind of just, maybe it was like a slap in the face to kind of say, you can read stuff like this, it's okay. And it was a scandal, but I think those kind of things, I'm not comparing E.L. James to Arthur Miller, but those kind of books do like force the normalization of, you know, it being acceptable to read.
I'm going to read a little section from 50 Shades of Grey to talk about clunky writing and kind of slightly questionable attitudes. "I want you sore, baby," he murmurs, and he continues his sweet, leisurely torment backward, forward. "Every time you move tomorrow, I want you to be reminded that I've been here. Only me. You are mine."
So that to me sounds like a really bad sex experience, because I'm thinking it's just that traditional stereotype of the more vigorous it is, the more sort of uncomfortable thrush-like symptoms you develop the next day. The better, you know, it's kind of that male cliche of like, you won't be able to walk, you know, you'll be walking around like a cowboy, you know, you're not gonna be able to stand up. It's such a turn off, because it doesn't imply any kind of technique to me. It's just pure
cranberry juice.
I call it Jack Russell style, which you know, I think we were kind of hopefully put together to be a bit more sophisticated than dog shagging, which is kind of what that brings to life.
But I think it also kind of dumbs down the reader a bit with that kind of writing sometimes, because don't people want something left to the imagination? I mean, I'm all about, you know, using descriptive words and, you know, descriptions of licking and biting and like, and skin, like descriptions and smells and like feelings, and all of that is great. But not when he thrusted his shaft into her. I'm like, that's not how sex works. There's so many different layers to sex.
And have you written about, because obviously you're a writer, haven't you? You've just finished a book recently.
Yeah.
Which is very soon, I imagine, going to be snapped up by a publisher. and then you'll be a very famous author. And
Seven-figure deal.
Yeah. Have you got sex scenes in the book?
Yeah, in the novel that I wrote, there's an instance of like a really brief affair, and there's a scene that deals explicitly with a moment that could be seen as coercion, and it's a little bit aggressive. But then, the character that, shall we say, could be seen as the victim is also questionable in her motives, and she's lonely, and she's attracted to the guy, and it was writing it was difficult, but also made it probably more difficult because it was based on true events, very loosely. And I think writing that scene, or really even like marital sex, it's really complicated to do well because, you know, it can be written to titillate in a very obvious way, but it's wholly dependent on the voice of the writer and the style of the book and the tone of the book, you know. And I'm like, in that scene, the descriptions that I used was like how he, you know, his fingers couldn't undo the buttons of her dress quickly because he was sweating, and, you know, she was pinned up against the wall, and you can't tell if she liked it or she didn't. It was all, I'm trying to make the reader really uncomfortable while they're watching it, but also a little bit excited. Like, you know, if you watch porn, right? you kind of are like, oh, I can't look away, but I kind of want to. It feels a little bit, disturbing.
I've written a really sexy story. So where I last used, well, I used to work at a place called Press Association, which is the national news agency, a bit like Reuters, but British. And we had someone from Mills and Boone come and do a workshop with some of the feature writers. It was brilliant. I think they do it as like an activity that you can, you know, like a Tupperware party around summers. And she came and did it. And I think if you're writing something, it really helps to have a specific challenge. And what she did was she said to us, think of an object and write around that object. And
what, in a sexual way?
Yes. Yeah. Not like I fancy my water bottle, but just, you know, incorporate it. I'm looking at Anarchy's water bottle. Actually, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty fine. But
now I'm seeing that as phallic. Great, yeah. Thanks.
You chose an object and you kind of incorporated it into a sexy story. And I found that much easier to write than just plucking something out of the air.
Yeah.
And I think when we come to set our homework, I will do, I'll tell you more about it. But I think that's why I found it a bit easier, because it was just like, here's something to do.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's something we haven't touched on yet. But reading aloud, kind of sensual writing, because I mean, I think so much of our culture now is visual. You know, and obviously podcasts are doing well because that's kind of a break, isn't it, almost for your eyes. But one of the recommendations I think sometimes from sex therapists is to read erotic fiction together, you know, to read segments of books that turn you on to one another.
Oh, wow.
Which, A, it does a couple of things. One, it gets rid of a screen, because hopefully you're actually doing it with a book. But also it becomes a slightly less direct way to talk about fantasy. Because if you're saying, oh, I really love this bit that I'm reading you now, it becomes quite obvious easier. Segues quite easily then into,
that's really interesting,
you know, getting into the mood and maybe trying something different.
Yeah,
I've read a similar tip which is sort of the opposite, which is it's actually in this book that I have here on the table. How convenient. It's a book called Becoming Clitorate, and it's by Dr. Laurie Minz, M-I-N-T-Z. It's a great book about closing the orgasm gap, which is obviously something very close to our hearts and our clitorises. I have a real problem with plurals.
Is it clitorises?
Yeah.
Clitori.
I like clitori, though. And she suggests that if you're having trouble having an orgasm on your own, you should watch TV or read a book, like not sexy ones, just like anything, while masturbating, to start you off, because apparently the mental barriers to us becoming turned on, this is for women, are quite large. And so if you can sort of distract your mind a little bit and just some kind of repetitive motion, even a vibrator, I guess, happening below, you can then eventually be taken over with you know, erotic feelings.
So it's kind of like meditation, but with an orgasm at the end.
Yes.
Great.
Best kind of meditation. And actually, on that note, I wanted to point out something that, again, one of our listeners recommended to us. This is in series one when we did our piece on feminist porn. And she told me about something called hysterical literature. Have you heard of it?
Oh,
have you
my
seen
goodness.
It? So artist Clayton Cubitt, C-U-B-I-T-T.
He is amazing. I follow him on Instagram. I've been following him for about 2 years. He's extraordinary. This project is insane.
Do you want to describe it? Go on.
So basically, this artist, Clayton Cubitt, videotapes and takes pictures of women who are masturbating while reading literature.
Oh, wow.
And they're, I mean, I can't even, I guess you'd have to witness it, but.
So who's holding the book then?
So she's, so the women, and it's all kinds of women, very, you know, good diverse range of women sitting at a desk. It's shot in black and white, really beautiful. You can't see what's happening under the desk.
Yep.
So she's holding her favourite book, I think, with both hands, and
someone
underneath is there with a vibrator.
Yeah.
I don't know who that person is.
Great job.
Maybe him. I don't know. And it's just so interesting because it's almost like they're news readers. It's kind of like there they are at a desk formally
and
reading
you
a
see
book.
Their bodies change, their face changes,
their voice.
Their breathing. Yeah. It's incredible.
So it's literally just shot from the upwards of the
his,
table.
His photography is absolutely stunning. Like Clayton Cubitt.
Right.
And people should just, I mean, he should have more followers than he has. It's incredible. He does photo shoots, videos, Some of it is a little bit dark and subversive, but it's all just shot with such a beautiful eye. And this idea was just phenomenal.
Well, that moves on quite nicely to our interview this week. So we ended up talking to Clover Stroud, who's written a book called The Wild Other. And she's in the process of writing her second book. And I'm not playing competitive, how many children have you got? But she's got five children.
Oh my God, that's a lifestyle.
So if you're a writer with five children, we actually spent quite a lot of time talking about just when do you write and how do you do that? Because that to me felt like quite a monumental task. But she does talk about sex and writing about sex, because within her last book, she has descriptions of sex in it. And one of the things she says that is she tries to sort of make it feel as authentic as possible, which I think is kind of what you were touching on when you were saying, actually, it's not about thrust and cock.
And it's messy and complicated. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what we kind of talk about. And we also talk about bad sex that's been written about and how to get it right and kind of words generally that we find sexy. So that's Clover Stroud coming
up
now.
She's got quite a sexy voice as well, hasn't she?
She's incredibly... Yeah, she is. I was going to say she's incredibly sexy, but she has got a very sexy voice. Okay, so I'm very excited today because we've got Clover Stroud here who, we were just saying outside that I feel like I have met you because I've read lots of your things and I've kind of seen you on Instagram, but we haven't ever met before. Obviously, you're an author and you were talking about you're working on a new book as well.
Yes.
Can you just give us a brief little intro just for people who haven't heard of you and don't know who you are?
Yeah, sure. Well, I did about 15 years of... freelance journalism from my mid-20s when I had two of my kids, and I did that on through my 30s, and then in the last couple of years I've been writing, I wrote a memoir called The Wild Other, and I've combined that with doing kind of lifestyle journalism, and also I had a second marriage and I had another three kids in my 30s. Mm-hmm. I'm now 42, and so I've got five children, and sort of writing about what I'm interested in, which is kind of what it means to be a woman, essentially, and the things that we're, you know, lots of us are sort of struggling with.
Today we're going to be talking about kind of writing and sort of sex.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we're quite interested in.
Yeah.
And I suppose at The Hotbed, in our previous podcast actually, we talk about film and TV and kind of how that often shows sex in quite, I guess, quite an unrealistic, idealised way, so that you can be sort of sat on the sofa with your partner and you're kind of watching someone having very athletic sex. You know, maybe the woman's on top and she sort of...
always wears a bra. I find that weird.
Yeah, sort of very... I mean, it can be quite intimidating. So I think we talked about The Affair and said that even in that show, which was a Sky Atlantic show, I think they had... Even the couple who were splitting up... had the most incredible sex.
Really, really hot sort of staring into
one another's eyes. Yeah. And I just wondered, what's your perspective sort of, I guess, thinking about kind of books and having the experience of writing about sex? I mean, first off, do you find it hard to write sex scenes? Because obviously your writing is very much about being true and authentic and trying probably not to be too perfect.
Yeah.
What's your experience been?
Well, I really, really enjoy writing about sex, actually. And The Wild Other, my first book, has got quite a lot of sex in it, because sex for me is so much bound up with sort of my experience of being alive as well. And it has informed so much of what I've done. And so when I have... And I've always been very honest. For example, within family life, I talk to my kids very openly about sex. And And so when I was writing as well, when I was writing the book, there are sex scenes in it, which is me having sex, which is obviously, you know, quite a strange thing to do, to write a sex scene about yourself. But when I was writing creatively, I was absolutely imaginatively in that place. And one of the things that I wanted to avoid was being sort of anatomical in the way that I wrote about sex. So there's no, you know, I don't use the word... I think I used the word clitoris once in the entire book, and it's actually not really to do with sex at that reference. But for me, it was more about the way that I feel about sex in normal life, which is that I can be, you know, making pasta for my kids or on the tube going to a meeting, and a sort of sexual feeling or memory or urge will be there. And I think that we all have those feelings, and we all have, and it's the way they kind of come into absolutely normal life. They don't happen at a romantic moment in the bedroom or at a romantic moment, you know, away at a hotel or whatever. They are absolutely, for me, that feeling of sexuality, I suppose, is such a kind of motor and such a power. And that's why it's strange when you see it represented in films and stuff, because it's always with these kind of perfect bodies and maybe slightly damaged lives, but still kind of, you know, picturesque lives. And actually, our normal lives are much more messy and unpicturesque and speaking for myself, overweight and, you know, all of those feelings. And you don't see that on the screen at all. And so I wanted to, in the book, I wanted to write about that way that, yeah, sex kind of comes into normal life all the time. And I found it really, really interesting. And in my new book, I'm writing a book about motherhood, and I feel like motherhood and sex is so closely bound together that, yes, but sort of as mothers, we're almost not really allowed to talk about it, not supposed to talk about it. And some, you know, there's a very sort of old-fashioned patriarchal kind of language around it and sort of understanding it around it. And I really want to kind of bust out of that. That's what I'm trying to do with my writing anyway.
Mm. When you're sort of growing up, sometimes the first encounter you might have with sex, well, apart from maybe hearing rumours at school and stuff, is maybe reading about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, I mean, certainly I went to an all-girls school, and I remember there was a very well-thumbed copy of Jackie Collins, and it was kind of passed around, and then we actually had the highlighted bits, so it was kind of highlighted.
Read this!
Yeah. And I just remember that having an incredible impact.
Yeah.
And then also, my mum was a feminist, and she had a lot of books like Nancy Friday.
Oh yeah, Nancy Friday is really important.
That was mind-blowing when I read it. And I suppose what was nice about it in a way is that because you weren't seeing bodies, you were hearing descriptions, and you could put yourself within it. You know, it could fuel your own fantasies in a way.
Definitely. And I hope that young people have that as well. You know, obviously they have their phones and porn can be right there, but I hope that they do have that sense of sex being a kind of written thing as well. I definitely, for me, it was really, really important. I remember finding, and I think this has kind of slightly informed my pleasure in the kind of reading that I like, or the kind of porn that I like actually as well, which is very, very much about normal life. I think I found something like a Mayfair book of like readers' letters or something like that, and it was very, very much normal people's experiences of being aroused and being swept away by desire and by lust and you know, physical longing. And I really enjoyed reading those letters, and I remember finding this book and then taking it up to my room. And I was probably really quite young. I reckon I must have been about 9 or 10 or something like that, and reading was a way of reading, you know, reading about sex in that way was a way of sort of ingesting it, I suppose.
It's always been said that it's very hard to write good sex, and I know that every year they have the awards with, you know, the most terrible kind of sex from literature, and I was having a look at the latest ones, and actually they didn't strike me as
being that
bad.
It was that awful. I know, I was looking at
them. And I was thinking, God, why is it so awful? And I think that's probably why, you know, I've tended to steer clear of writing about sex unless it's been something that's more around a situation around sex rather than the actual act itself, because I've always been worried about how it comes across. But have you found it difficult, or do you just find that actually if you use your own, because you're obviously writing memoir, you're using your own sort of recollections, and you're just trying to be true to that, and that helps you steer clear, because you're not actually trying to project a vision of something else. You're being yourself.
And you're trying, I'm trying to access, when I'm writing about it, I enjoy it because I'm trying to access what the kind of deepest emotion of it. And I think for me, like I said earlier, the kind of staying away from the anatomy of it, because that's when it starts becoming kind of, I don't know, it just, like, you then feel a bit divorced from it. And I try to put myself right back into my head. And what do I feel like when I'm, what did I feel like with that incredible Russian guy that I was sleeping with? I can remember it really clearly, and it was very much a feeling of, you know, of the sort of being completely the drive, the sexual drive, I suppose, that you feel, or the feeling when I'm with my husband, who I totally adore and really, really fancy, and kind of the sort of, like, it's more, for me, it's more about the smell of somebody and the taste of their skin and the feeling of wanting to sort of when I talk write about Pete, my husband, I talk about wanting to like exist within inside his body. I suppose it should be the other way around, but I felt like I write about wanting to be inside his chest cavity. You know, it was that kind of physical, you know, the sort of, it's almost like, you know, wanting to devour something, wanting to be physically the same part of them. I think the person who is the real master of it is Jilly Cooper, you know. The way that she writes about sex is really, really sexy. Riders is, I think so many of us read that book as teenagers and really, you know, really, really devoured it and loved it. And she writes, and she's quite explicit, actually, in the way that she writes, isn't it?
And she is. And also the other thing is that she objectifies men as well. So even on the cover of the book, you know, there's that kind of, you know, I don't know, it's almost a precursor to things like the Chippendales and when we started to sort of be more lecherous towards the male physique. Just to wrap up, because it's interesting, obviously we sort of founded the Hotbed initially sort of to talk about the challenges of sort of maintaining sex after kids, and actually it's kind of expanded a bit now and we talk about lots of other things as well. But you've sort of said that, you know, you've obviously you still fancy your husband and you still have a good sex life and stuff, and I think a lot of people who are listening will think, you know, how is that even possible? Because we hear so many people who send us messages and stuff and write and will say, you know, they either have no sex life at all or they have a pretty unadventurous one. But generally, it's never as good as it was
before pre-kids. Yeah.
What would be your, I guess for somebody who's kind of going through that, is there any advice you'd give? Because you're in a very different mindset where you seem to be able to see your partner in quite a fresh way, despite the fact that, you know, you've had kids together and tired and all the other stuff.
Well, there's two things, I guess. One thing that I feel is that he's my second husband, and I feel I was married in my 20s and that didn't work, and then I met Pete in my 30s, and I think second relationships, you know, the big second one, is really interesting because you can, for me anyway, I personally have been able to kind of correct and understand some of the problems from the first relationship and what went wrong and why I didn't make the wrong choices in marrying him. I really loved him and I still love him and I adore the two children that we had together, but that it made me understand things about myself and how to behave in a different way within the relationship, and that has been really useful in terms of informing my second marriage, definitely. And I also feel massive sense of gratitude to my second husband because of the feeling of kind of the second chance that it gives you at the whole thing. And in terms of sort of feeling desire, with children, it's hard. I'm not saying that it's not hard, and I'm not saying at all that we're like having masses of sex all the time, but I do definitely really desire him and I really fancy him. And I think one of the things that I think is that when I'm feeling as though I don't massively feel like sex, or it could be not the kind of sex that I really want, I feel this sense that if you're aware you've had good sex in the past and then you've had kids and then it's a bit tiring, it's not really what you want to be doing, I have a very strong sense when I'm having sex that all of the sex that we've ever had, all of the, you know, brilliant sex before children when it was just pure kind of lust and desire and that absolute urgency all the time of a new relationship, I always kind of have a sense of it, and I try and kind of foster a sense as well of all of that sex informing where we are at that moment. And it's not as though, you know, it's not as though, I don't think sex is about novelty. The feeling of knowing him better and better, and and we've been through some really, really tough times in the last few years, being able to get through that and still kind of want each other feels like a huge act of love, actually. And I think I feel more than ever the sense of love being part of sex.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in today.
It's been lovely talking to you.
It's been really, really good. It's really cool. I've really enjoyed it. And we'll be looking out for your new book as well.
Yes,
cool. And yeah, wishing you lots of luck to get that finished as well.
Thank you very, very much.
All right, thank you.
Right, well, I hope you all enjoyed our discussion with Clover. And as I said, if you want to look up her book, it will be in the notes, but it's called The Wild Other. You know, I was looking up words for vagina on the internet, and one of the ones that's quite common here is obviously Fanny.
Yeah.
And what does Fanny... Because Fanny in the US is completely different.
Fanny is your butt, your bum.
Right.
So when we have that... We don't call it a bum bag. Hmm. In the US, we call it a fanny pack.
A fanny pack.
But if we called a fanny pack over here, it would probably mean entirely different That's thing. That could be in 50 Shades.
Exactly. But also, what would commonly, I'm being an anthropologist here, but what would you call, like, would you say vagina or pussy? What is the most kind of common?
Pussy is probably in kind of writing and, you know, kind of, if you want to talk dirty, that's probably pussy is more, yeah, what Americans would use. Or... I don't know. I mean, it's funny. Everybody has names for it, though, don't they?
Mm.
Like in different countries. So,
do you have like a kind of preferred name, or like a name that you think? Because from a personal perspective, I know vulva is the right technical term, but I really don't like it as a word. I just think it's, I don't know what it is. It just conjures up.
It sounds quite hard, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it just makes me think about lentils and Hessian skirts. And
I really like the word clitoris. I think clitoris is great as a word. Or just clit, for short.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of, that's quite sexy.
But what would you call the whole package, though?
The whole thing. I'm really working hard on vulva. No pun intended, or pun intended. I'm working really hard on it because I think it is the right word to use.
It's the accurate word.
Yeah, but it's a habit. My habit is vagina. Yeah.
What about same. A sexy word, though? Because I just think if you say to someone, could you touch my vulva now? Because I'm kind of, you know, I'm ready for my vulva. To be
my vulva
wet.
Is ready.
My vulva. Because pussy always seems to be, it is the sexier word.
Is the thing that, I mean, I don't know, that's kind of the center of attention, isn't it?
Mm.
I think clitoris is really fun to use because it does sound sexy, actually, even though it's the technical
term.
Word. Yeah.
And it takes up a lot of the vulva as well because it's not just the teeny tiny bit at the top, it's actually extending.
Mm.
Right down through the lips.
Sometimes I forget that you're breastfeeding, and then when you start undoing your top,
she's getting hot and bothered.
Like, we really are having an impact here.
She's getting excited.
Lisa's getting undressed.
I'm just going to bare my breasts.
Okay, so sort of sexy words. What about with because like kind of the penis, descriptors of the penis quite often. I mean, penis itself as a word is not very sexy. Cock is kind of the most common one, isn't it?
Yeah, but in the US, I think you more than likely to hear a dick.
Which oh, really?
I thought really cock. Don't know. I really just don't like that word.
Mm.
Cock, I think, is sexy. I don't know. I think it's a great word.
Mm. It's very self-contained, and there's something about the C at the beginning and at the end, which it sort of rolls off the tongue, pun intended, really nicely. I also think like a hard-on is sexy. Or
Yeah.
Like, I quite like it when women say they've got a hard-on, which is
something
I've noticed.
That's
happening
so
more.
Great.
Yeah.
It's quite empowering, isn't it?
So much. I first heard it in Ghost World. Have you seen Ghost World?
No.
So Scarlett Johansson would be like, oh, so I have like a total hard-on for that guy. And I was like, that's really cool. And actually, the more I've read about...
That's more accurate.
The more I've read about female anatomy, the more I realise it's true because you do have... You've got erectile tissue in your vulva.
Yeah.
And as blood flows down there, it becomes erect.
Vulva. I like the way Anki says it. Vulva.
You're working on it, aren't you? You're working on it too.
But I just think it could be a name. So if I said to you... My name is Vulva. Would you flinch, or would you think that was? I mean, that's the way you pronounce
up, or
it.
I
you could
away.
Actually do that.
It's like an Austin Powers sort of baddie.
Why did your mother hate you? She named you Vulva.
Vulva.
All this talk about, descriptions, heavy descriptions, detailed descriptions about sex. One of my favorite things when I'm reading a book is a description of a kissing scene.
Mm.
I don't know what it is, and I'm absolutely no prude, but. There's something really lovely about a good description, or even in a movie.
Mm.
There's something really inherently sexy about a really good makeout session.
Mm.
And I think that's even probably hard to write. Really.
Well, it's so intimate as well, isn't it? And unfortunately, it's often one of the things that is neglected. You know, in long-term relationships, sometimes you can stop doing that regularly. So it's kind, and it's often the first contact you have with someone as well. Is that kiss?
It's quite because it is. It's like there's something slightly potentially mysterious about it, or saucy, or delicate, or there's so many different layers to kissing. So which eventually leads to something else.
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Tania.
Thank you, Tatiana,
for coming.
It's been great.
And it's been really good. And seriously, what's the title of your book? Just so that...
Well...
Or is you still... Are you still...
No, the title right now is The Cranes.
The Cranes, okay.
Because there is... Ukrainian imagery in it because I'm Ukrainian, and that's it's loosely based on my grandmother's life. So it's there's an affair, there's a forced adoption, and throughout it there's cranes imagery because cranes are inherent in Ukrainian literature. So mm-hmm. there's intrigue, and I'm proud of it.
So thanks a lot for coming today. I've got some homework to set as well for our listeners, which is we were talking earlier about this little exercise of describing an object in a kind of sensual, evocative, sexy way. So we're sort of setting you the task. You know, it's actually quite nice as if you haven't written a lot to have someone give you a specific task. So try and write 500 words about an object, but really bring to life the kind of, in a really evocative way, the way it looks, the way it feels. It doesn't have to be like a dildo. It could just be something like a glass or a beautiful painting. I'm trying to think of something not very sexy. Maybe not a beaker or a packet of wet wipes, but anything at all. And then send them in to us, and we'll give you the notes in the show notes, and then the best ones we'll put on our website. So that might be your foray into a career as an erotic fiction writer. Who knows? You might suddenly discover a talent that you never knew you had. So that's it for this week. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you for our next episode. Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.